So what's in the mailbag?
We've got a couple of great emails this week. We've got Sean, who's written in saying, I want to share my vitamin B6 toxicity experience briefly, and that is because we've been talking about it in the news with the TGA changing.
Eventually.
In, yeah. in June 2027. That really got your goat, didn't it, Norman?
By the year 2100, they'll do something about it. Yeah,
it got Norman's goat, everyone. But yes, they've changed how you can access it. Well, that's going to come into effect, so it's not as accessible in different doses. You'll need to speak to a pharmacist. But Sean says, I take a magnesium supplement for cramps mostly. I was told zinc was needed as well. After 3 months of taking zinc daily with 28 milligrams per tablet of B6, I experienced fingertip tingling, which progressed to the same on both feet. I saw the report on 7:30 on B6 and stopped the zinc immediately. After just 3 months of B6 overdose and a year after cessation, the nerve disruption has subsided only marginally and it persists today.
Oh dear.
I now know even 28 milligrams daily of B6 on top of a good diet is an overdose with apparently permanent ramifications. It seems the TGA has bowed to commercial pressure in delaying B6 restrictions.
I'm on your side, Sean. It's ridiculous.
That's a very interesting story. I think we should also remember that this can happen at much lower doses than what people think, as Sean has just demonstrated. So you don't really need a supplement unless you're deficient or...
That's the irony, is that you don't need it. The trouble is you don't have a choice. If you're deciding you're going to take a supplement, sometimes the B6 is there, and if you're wanting that supplement, you've got to take the B6.
But with it.
I think you and I would both say, throw it in the bucket and don't buy it.
Yes, unless you're preconception, planning a pregnancy, or you're deficient, there's always asterisks to that. Fiona has also written in, I was listening to the episode Re-Women in Health, and I thought I might share our story with you.
We should explain. I mean, this is the story on pain and women being recognised.
Yes, the Victorian Health Inquiry into Women's Pain, which we covered last week. So Fiona says, our 18-year-old granddaughter presented to the ED in the central west of New South Wales with sudden onset of headache, not previously having suffered with headaches. She was sent home with Panadol, a pat on the hand for women's problems. She then
presented. So they thought it was menstrual.
Well, I think, or possibly just not fully investigated is perhaps the suggestion. She then represented to the same facility with aphasia and was again sent home with the diagnosis of women's problems. Yes, you're right, menstrual.
So the fact that you can't speak, which is what aphasia is, I mean, this is mind-boggling.
That's not menstrual, friends. Of course, there are limited doctors, and trying to get appointments is a nightmare. She did see a doctor in another town, 1.25 hours from home, had an MRI and was flown to Sydney with a brain tumour and operated within 4 days. She has since had radiotherapy and chemo at the Lifehouse. She has ceased active treatment and it's a wait and see game now. We are so sorry to hear that, Fiona. But that is a classic example of where women can actually be dismissed in the healthcare system and their problems attributed to hormonal stuff when it's just not that.
So we've got one from Alyssa as well.
Yes, who says, I work in a publicly funded sexual health clinic in New South Wales.
Oh, so this is on the same topic.
Yes. Because from the Victorian Pain Inquiry, there was the announcement of the green whistles coming into some hubs for an insertion of an intrauterine device. So that's what Elisa's referring to. We wanted to offer Penthrox whistles to our patients undergoing IUD insertion, but hit a wall with regard to ventilation. Turns out there are a lot of guidelines around how many whistles can be used in an enclosed space and subsequent staff exposure to the medication.
Oh, so you might get high. That's a theory.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
So she says a pregnant staff member should not be in the room when a patient is using the whistle. I didn't know that. I'm sure that I've been in a room. Okay. We decided this was an unacceptable HR issue because we can't be asking staff to disclose early pregnancies. We really wanted to be able to use the whistles, but it was an administrative nightmare. I would love to know how ambulance officers, for example, get around this. They are using them in a very confined space. I'd certainly be watching the Vic whistle trial for IUDs closely.
Good point. And we might have a look at this in the new year.
And please write into us also if there's anyone who goes, oh, this is what we do. But you do have to declare it with radiation. Because I remember being in many theatres and people would go, I can't be in the room for the whatever Will calls it when he flicks the machine for an X-ray, the little portable one.
It's called the switch.
But you have to declare it early for that. So anyway, I'm not sure what the way around is. If you want to write in and tell us, or you want to add other thoughts, you have questions, comments, topics for us next year, our address is healthreport@abc.net.au.
Don't forget our sister podcast, What's That Rash, where this week we're looking at creatine. Does it have uses beyond muscle? Are there any risks? You can find that out. Meantime, Priya, I'll see you next week when you'll be a year older.
I will be a year older. and wiser potentially too, Norman.
Yes, how could you be even wiser than you are? I just don't know.
Oh, he's being nice to me, everybody. Luckily, this is on tape. I'll see you next week, Norman.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.